Hello, and welcome to another episode here on the Youth Theater Podcast. I'm your host this week, Carowyn Heaney. Hope you're all doing well. Our guest today is Scott Whistler. Scott is the Executive Director of the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts, or in short, the MVCPA. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Carowyn. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. Okay. So let's just start at the very beginning. How did you initially get into the wacky world of theater?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that, and I tried to remember. The truth is, I can't remember because this is just sort of what I've always done for my whole life. When I was a little kid, we were doing shows, or we were doing music, or we were doing something in my family. My mom would hand me a script and say, learn these lines. We're doing this at my school where she was the teacher, or we're doing this at church, or and there was just always stuff going on, little operas, silly little operettas, and she would be 20 minutes short for a show at school, and so here we're adding this skit, and it's just it's what we always did. I sang in choirs just all over the place. It's like, here, put this on and we're doing this music. And we would go, I grew up in Las Vegas, and we would be, I was in the Las Vegas Boys Choir, and I was just a little carefree kid. I had no idea what we were doing. So, today's the day we're standing backstage and I'm paying attention to the tigers playing in the cage and not to when I'm supposed to walk on stage. So it was just what I always did. I have no idea what normal people do with their lives.
Me too. Were you also involved in any of like the tech in those shows, or like the more production aspect?
Yeah, well, it was sort of a everybody does everything kind of thing. If stuff needed done, you did it. I never had any real technical background or training until I got into college. And I went to college to be a music major, and then I started hanging out with this this lovely woman who was in theater, and that was my downhill slide into technical work and production work. She was a costumer, and so I started hanging around with that bad sort of people. So in college, I learned a lot of lighting and some odds and ends of construction, and I really concentrated on stage managing a lot, and that just sort of carried me through a career. So since college, generally I've gotten paid for some sort of production work or for management or administrative work, and that pays the bills so that after work I can go to rehearsal and be in a show or a choral group or whatever I happen to be doing right now. So, and I heartily recommend that, being a stagehand makes more money generally at the local and regional theater kind of level. And you get to do, the best theater work around. You just aren't going to make a whole lot of money as an actor, but if you can support yourself as a carpenter, a stagehand, a lighting tech, or especially in stage management, then you can have time free to go be an actor and not worry about whether you're getting paid for that or not. So,
yeah, it's definitely great to be involved in many facets of theater so you have those options.
Sure.
So you've been in theater for basically your entire life. You must have learned a lot of things just about that you can use every day. Like what things have you learned from theater?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not all that smart, so I have to keep learning things over and over. What's important about being a theater person is really what's important about life. It's about being, about communicating with a group and being for the group and being part of the group. And sometimes what you're doing really is about you. You're the guy downstage center with the follow spot. And if you're there, great. But sometimes it's not about you. Sometimes you need to be the people call the person calling the cues, or the guy running that follow spot, which, by the way, I love to run a follow spot. It's still going to be my favorite gig, but I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. Theater is kind of a microcosm. If all of your friends are theater people and all of your life is doing theater, then all of those life lessons are just applied daily. You know, it's just who you are. But you can't be in theater if you don't listen to people. You know, you can't be an actor, right? If you're not listening to what the other people on stage are saying. Well, I'll take that back. You can't be a good actor if you're not listening to what the people are saying. And if that's not a big lesson in life, you know, I don't know what is.
So you're the executive director at MVCPA. What do you do in your role there?
Yeah, I still haven't exactly figured out what that title means, to be honest. It's a big old catchphrase. It's basically figure out what needs done and do it. I've had the job for 16 years last week, and I'm sort of getting the hang of it. The truth is, executive director really is a title that you see more in the nonprofit world. And at Mountain View Center, we are not nonprofit, we are city government. And so the truth is, I'm not the guy in charge. You know, I answer to the community services director and he answers to the city manager. And so it's not like I have all this power and autonomy and all of that, but rather I consider myself to be the guy who interprets the needs of the theater people for the city people and vice versa. So we do operate in a city government. We're part of city government. We have to make the budget. We have to do things correctly as far as the city's concerned. And I try to leverage that to the advantage of the companies that are using the Center for Performing Arts. And I also try to keep that from getting in those companies' ways. If I'm the guy who understands what the city needs right here, then PYT and Smuin Ballet and TheaterWorks don't have to worry about that. And if they need something that's not really quite the way a city person would think about it, then my job is to figure out how to get those two approaches to life to merge together, you know, and not ever bend rules for anybody, but interpret the rules correctly. The dirty secret is the city really wants all of the companies that use the center to succeed. It just doesn't always seem that way. So my job is to, you know, figure out, okay, we're asking for the same thing. How do I make this thing work in city budget speak? And sometimes how do I delay this thing for 3 years so that it can work in city budget speak and that sort of stuff. So it's been weird. I was really only a theater person until I showed up at the city. And actually, a whole lot of learning how to work for the city is thanks to Karen Simpson, who is your executive director, because she was working for the city at the time. And she kind of, when I first was the operations manager there, and I had to give her financial reporting for my department, and I had no idea what that was, and I wrote her some creative writing that was what I thought was a financial report, and she very patiently helped me turn it into something that would not make the city people's heads explode. So I don't even know where I came from there. Sorry, Carolyn, I went lost.
No worries.
I got lost. Sorry, Karen, I know you're there shaking your head saying, oh my God. But you remember those financial reports too, so. Yeah, I'm sure she does.
Obviously, in normal times, the role of the MVCPA is partially to provide an amazing space for people to learn theater and other arts and to perform it for the community. So how do you think that role has changed during these times in the pandemic?
Oh, that's a really painful question to ask, because it's, you know, we, all of us are in the business of mass gatherings. So we kind of became a dirty word for a while. I have seen our role since March as being to do everything in my power to keep all of my user groups and constituent groups to help everybody survive to the end of the pandemic and be ready to restart. This time is so hard on small companies, large companies, medium-sized companies. It's also really monstrously hard on stagehands. So in the very first week of the shutdown, I went to my boss and said, we have to find a way to keep supporting our stagehands. And we actually talked the city manager, and this wasn't even hard, by the way, because the city manager is totally on our side, but talked her into paying all of the people for all of the work that they had scheduled for the next 2.5-3 months. We paid people right up to the beginning of June, even though they couldn't do any work. We basically managed to keep everyone on the payroll and keep the paychecks going. So that's important. Then we turned around and said to every company, we are not going to cost you anything in this closure. So we spent the next 3 months refunding clients and waiving refund fees, refunding patrons, trying to find ways to waive those fees, and racking up a really horrifying negative balance on our annual budget, and just trying to keep everyone around. My third user group that gets forgotten a lot is we have about 300 active volunteers at the center who are really important to us, because if I had to pay ushers union wages, you know, up in San Francisco, the ushers are unionized. And if I had to pay even the union base, it would more than double the cost of PYT to use MVCPA. So I got to keep all of these ushers who are older people, they're at risk, they're scared, they're staying away. I got to keep them active and involved. So we jumped into a series of happy hours, just spent our whole lives on Zoom, but also started new newsletters, weekly newsletters for the ushers and for the tech staff. And so all of our permanent staff are communicating just like crazy and trying to keep the volunteers involved. So that was a really long-winded way of saying, I can't do theater right now. We are not a good TV studio. We're not. The first thought was, oh, well, let's just start doing a lot of online stuff. But frankly, you guys, PYT doesn't need me to help produce online content. And, you know, Mountain View has KMVT. We've got plenty of good opportunities. So if someone wants to book the space, oh, here's my commercial. If you want to book Second Stage or Main Stage for your online show, we got great broadband, come do it. But the fact is, that's not what we're really good at. So we decided early on, we're just going to let everybody else do that. If people need help with ticketing, we're still trying to work out a way to make that work well. But frankly, you guys don't need us for that. So yeah, we're trying to stay out of the way, plan for reopening, know what it's going to take. I'm in conversations with other performing arts center operators nationally, so that when we open to national standards of cleaning, cleanliness, and we know what we're doing, and we're learning from each other's mistakes. A lot of people are moving into the live streaming business. And so, in fact, we have recently done exactly one live stream concert from Second Stage. We had a young piano student who was just about to give his senior piano recital for one of our small clients. It's a local piano school. And so we brought in the piano tuner and tuned and then sanitized the piano. And we brought in the student's father as cameraman, and we locked our own crew into the booth so that we could light the concert. We threw the broadband cable out the window so they could plug into it, and we live streamed his senior recital. And we're set to do that. A lucky thing we did in the last 2 years was get our live streaming capabilities set up in both theaters so that we can do that. No one yet has done that for the main stage, because it's harder with a larger performance. It sort of implies that you're going to do more stuff, and no one's quite gotten there yet, but yeah, we're ready and able. So yeah, that's what we're doing. Helping where we can, trying to stay out of the way and trying not to cost anything. Trying to know when PYT and everybody else is ready to come back. We want to be the ones who know this is what we have to do to clean. This is what we have to do to handle the people coming into the building. None of these standards have been set yet. That's why we keep pushing our projected opening date back. You know, people ask me, oh, do we have guidance from the county about what it's going to take to open? And in fact, the answer is no, the county's not telling us. CDC is not telling nationally, is not telling performing arts centers what to do. I'm with the International Association of Venue Managers, and we talk about this every week. And the answer is CDC is waiting for us to tell them how it's going to be done. And so we're trying to figure it out. So when we did that live streaming event, we didn't go to the county. We read the county's guidelines and said, we believe this is what it says. And then I called the city attorney and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Does this violate the county guidelines? And the attorney said, no, I think this is fine. Go ahead. And that's how theaters are going to open around this country. There's not going to be a pronouncement from upstairs that says, you've been good, now you can open. It's going to be, people are going to say, this is our plan. Can we do it? And hopefully we're going to do it carefully so that people don't get sick. And we build confidence. That's another thing we're really worried about, is public confidence in the theaters. Our demographic is older. Okay, not PYT. You guys tend to have a younger audience, but most of my ticket buyers are older than 70. And those are the people, rightfully so, worried about going into a theater. And so we've got to earn their trust back as we move forward as well. So. Anyway, boy, that was a long-winded answer. Sorry, Carol, and I talk a lot. That's the thing, Carol.
No worries. This is a podcast. You're here to talk. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's perfect. Yeah, it makes my job easier. But yeah, it seems like you guys have really done a lot of, you've put a lot of effort and thought into, you know, helping people recover. So that's really impressive.
Well, I hope it's going to be worth it. You know, we won't know until we do it. And it may be that everything I think about how we're going to open, that may be wrong because we're still so far away from it. You know, who knows? But we're trying.
Yeah, it's really challenging. You have to be really adaptable. Speaking of which, my school, probably like many others in the area, is trying to perform a show over Zoom this semester. Which is always, you know, a challenging thing. Have you seen any online shows?
I work with a community theater in San Lorenzo Valley, Mountain Community Theater, and we started a series in April, maybe, called Ghostlight Theater, that is a weekly Zoom production of some sort. And just between you and me, it's really hard because all of the things that you and I know as actors don't apply. You know, I'm looking you right in the eyes, but you're looking slightly besides my eyes. And that's better, but you had to do that on purpose, right? Because we're trained to do it this way. I don't know if the reaction you give me is instantaneous or is 2 seconds behind me, because with Zoom, it changes all the time. You see, one of my favorite things with Zoom is someone slows way and then it catches them up real fast and gets them back into sync, right? And you see that show up in people's attempted theatrical productions on Zoom. And sometimes it's hilarious and sometimes it works, and often it gets in the way, which is, you know, kind of too bad. But the thing, I don't want to pretend to be an expert here, because I am a live events guy. One of my favorite things to do at Mountain View Center is to give tours to groups of non-theater people, so and especially a lot of kid groups, to talk about the magical thing that happens between the people on stage and the people in the audience. And I go into Aristotle and I talk about it, the concept that it isn't actually theater when there is no one in the seats. You know, the theater, that magical thing, is in the space between me and the audience. And that's the thing that is missing in Zoom. You know, as we get better at monitoring, we learn so much about how audiences work. You know, we know that audiences breathing synchronizes with the singers. And sometimes large portions of audiences' hearts synchronize. And that's how you know how good the show is. See, you don't know that, you don't say, well, I'm taking my pulse. Oh yeah, this is a good show. But when the show is really magical, that's what's going on. You're breathing with the actors or the singers. You're laughing because you hear the thing they're gonna say right before they say it, you know? And that sort of magic is what I live for, honestly. That's why, you know, I went to a place where we can do that 500 times a year, is do that magic. And I don't really care what the content is. I'm there for that interface between the content and the audience. And the same sorts of things happen, whether it's a symphony or a play or a musical or ballet, you know, that physical, that it's Vulcan, it's a mind meld thing. Ooh, I went all nerdy, but it is, it's a mind meld that happens between the audience and the people on stage. I will deny having said that if the person listening to this podcast is a City of Mountain View employee, because of course I am, I'm a very pragmatic person and I don't believe in magic, but no, that magic is really why we do what we do. So I don't know, from Zoom, the only thing I can tell you and the people that are producing shows is do it, go crazy, experiment with it. You're in this wonderful time where you get to experiment, and it's a brand new art form. So you get a lot of forgiveness, and also maybe you make these magical mistakes. Like, who knew? I was just on a call with some other people, and they were doing magic tricks, doing this magic trick, making their glass disappear, you know, and talking about, okay, how do we write this into a script, and how do we make it reliable enough, and how do we make the thing disappearing be another actor rather than just a glass of water? How do we use this? And someone's going to come up with some magical stuff there. So I would say, yeah, go crazy. Go for it. Make big mistakes. You know, if you're going to fall down big.
That's great advice. I think some of the most successful Zoom performances are ones that really experiment with it. And I saw Act of God at Palo Alto Players. Uh-huh. And they engaged the audience, where the audience could ask questions and they would answer them in real time. And I thought that was, you know, a successful way of, you know, keeping that bond between the audience and the actors, even if it was diminished significantly.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this day and age, now only 6 months into this pandemic. What do we think about Patti LuPone being mad at an audience member texting? Because I think our opinion has changed. As I'm talking to you, I'm looking at a chat screen here with the other folks on the podcast. It's our behaviors are different now. We expect me to have to click over here and make sure that my computer is going. And the other thing is, we expect the cat to walk in to the performance. You know, we do. So yeah, I'm interested, even at the same time, I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody knows what they're doing, but I think it's hilarious. See, I can make light come out of my fingers by waving them in front of the Center for Performing Arts. See, that kind of experimenting, I think, is just crazy fun. So,
Intriguing. I agree. It's really intriguing, like, what different things we can play around with. And like, my cat walks in front of my computer during class all the time, so I know what you mean.
Yeah, or you hear this funny noise and the cat's standing on the return key.
Yeah.
See what just happened?
So what
that
would
have never
think?
Happened on stage, by the way. That's a perfect illustration. Now we find out, oh, we're 3.5 seconds apart. And so I have to, A, apologize for talking over you, but that's who I am. I talk over people anyway. And then I have to back up and say, okay, what were you going to ask? Sorry about that.
I also talk over people, so this just makes it worse. But I was just going to ask what you think we might learn once it goes back to, like, you know, more live performances and, like, a sense of normalcy. What do you think theater might learn from this new format about, you know, engaging audiences or anything, really?
Yeah, well, I think we will have learned just what we were talking about, that audiences are maybe a little smarter than we thought they were. It's not new that people have been experimenting with different kinds of multimedia formats. You know, the curious incident of the dog in the night with all of the text happening around the proscenium and all of that stuff is sort of what a Zoom call is now. So I think we're gonna expect that sort of multimedia is the wrong word, because the people standing on stage aren't media, but added media kind of performances where I have the live people and other things going on. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, which is fun. But I think when we go back to the theater, the first thing that's going to happen after we're nervous, after we get used to, I'm in a room with other people that are not in my bubble, and we're going to do that for a little while, but then we're going to feel the magic again. And so, you know, that part's going to be important. And if we're really good, we'll be able to keep both of those things going, you know, keep the magic happening, but also learn ways to be more inclusive, more have a wider reach. A friend of mine runs summer theater camps similar to PYT. She does it for the city of Des Moines, Iowa. And they took their summer camps online, and they got a lot of new signups. And so they added more teachers and added more classes and added more content. And at the end of it, they had people in their local summer camps from 90 different cities. There were conversations with lots of those people saying, next year, if we are able to do a live theater summer camp, we are going to come to Des Moines and do your live theater summer camp. So I think we're making a lot of connections like that are beyond what we could have done before. A guy in one of our Ghost Light productions who is a good friend, and we've worked with him for years, and he moved away 8 years ago, but he's regularly doing local productions with us now. So yeah, I don't even know if I answered your question, but who knows, because by the time we reopen again, everyone will have forgotten this. So.
Well, you actually answered my question and my next question. So You're doing fantastic here.
Wait, what was the question?
The next question that you did answer was, do you think this time has taught us how we can reach out or connect more in normal times?
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
That's exactly what you talked about. Yeah.
There you go. It's probably taught us things to not do, too. Like, yes, everyone knows you're at home. Put a shirt on anyway. You know, we've learned that stuff.
Is there anything that, like, if you could go back in time to, like, your teenager self, like the age of a lot of like people in PYT, is there any like advice you would give to yourself, like particularly maybe about theater or just anything?
Oh, I could get myself into so much trouble with a question like that. Yeah, you don't have to choose is the thing that I would tell so many people. You can be a working artist for your whole life. It doesn't have to be your main career. You can be a singer, even if you are an accountant. And if you love being an accountant and love being a singer, gee, which one of those is going to pay more? For most people, it's going to be the accountant. It's going to be the accounting. So they should get that CPA. Do that thing, but they should never, ever stop singing. They should never, ever stop doing theater, because the people who stop don't come back. And I have, over the years, reconnected with friends who were brilliant actors when they were 22. But they had to get a job. They had to take care of their mom. They had to, whatever it was. They had to do it, and so they stopped doing it, and then they just never started back again. You don't have to be a professional to be a brilliant artist. In fact, you know, I've got a thing growing out of my head if I sit in the wrong place. Many of the best actors that I have ever worked with have been working for free. I will call them amateurs. They're doing what they love, but they're also the best actors around. And when I say that, I'm talking about people who have won international contests and taken shows to festivals in Europe. But I know a guy, he passed away about 5 years ago. This guy specifically, he knew he wanted to be an actor. He knew he didn't want to live in New York or Los Angeles. He grew up in Oklahoma City. That's where he was going to stay. And so he looked at his options, and he got a job driving trucks up and down a loading dock. Never left the property. They call that job a hostler. This guy, the main feature of his job was that it went from 2 a.m. until noon. So he never couldn't go to rehearsal because he had to go to work. And he did this for 35 years. He was a brilliant actor. I did a little one-act play with him that ended up winning local festivals and then state and then regional. And finally, it went on to represent the United States at the International Association of Amateur Theater in Monte Carlo. And he did have to take time off from work to go to Monte Carlo to do the show, but he didn't have to quit his job. So he did that for, you know, more than 3 decades, and did brilliant show after show after show. So yeah, if you love being an actor, be an actor. If you can't pay the bills, be an actor anyway. Find a decent way to pay the bills. And I also recognize some people really love being accountants, and that's awesome. There's nothing cooler than a well-designed spreadsheet. I get that. I totally agree with that. But you can do both of those things and still be an actor, a singer, or a stage manager, or that other thing that you also love. So yeah, that's what I would tell myself. Except I followed that advice accidentally. I accidentally got jobs in theater, and I did quit a couple of times, but the new job offers I got all ended up being in theater, so it was okay. So yeah.
That's really encouraging to hear, because I'm actually crossing my fingers to double major in college in theater and chemistry, which is very ambitious. And they're very different. We'll see what happens with that. But I definitely know that I want to like continue doing theater, even if I'm not, you know, in whatever capacity I can. So,
well, my daughter graduated with majors in physics and English and music. So can be done. It's crazy that people in the physics department think you're weird, the people in the music department think you're really weird. But do it. Yeah, no reason not to. And a chemist can make some money, so they can afford to be an actor.
Yeah, you always kind of have to battle the pragmatic side of things and having to do something that like to, you know, to feed you, to keep living.
You do. We all have to, and that's fine. That's what life is about. So you should do a thing you love, even if that thing is chemistry, even if that thing is building really awesome Excel spreadsheets, whatever it is, you can find things that you love. Running a follow spot. God, I love to run a follow spot. I haven't done that in years and years, by the way. But I love to do it. I would take a spot call tomorrow if, you know, I could go outside. So yeah, do the thing you love. But don't stop doing the other thing you love. I guess that's the addendum that I would tell everybody. Don't stop doing the other thing you love. So yeah, Karen Simpson is now trying to recruit me as a follow spot operator. Yeah, okay.
It's inevitable. Okay, this is the big question. What is the best advice or just some really good advice that you've received?
Oh, that I've received.
I mean, you clearly give good advice, so.
Yeah. Wow. I think I'm just channeling the advice that I've gotten. You know, everything you do, I guess I'm going back to where I started, but the reason we're in theater and the reason we're good at theater is because we communicate well individually and as a group, and we live and we are able to exist as a group. You put together a good cast of a show, and that is a group. It's a family. I know my wife stage manages shows that I'm in sometimes, and I know people that we haven't seen in 5 years who still call her mom, because that's the kind of stage manager she is. You do what you do for that group. You support that group. You show up at strike and you empty the trash. And if it's that kind of theater, you clean the toilets, but you do it for that group. And you do it for the people you love. And that's really what we're doing. You can't do theater if you don't love the people on stage and also love the people in the audience that you're communicating with. You can do it, you can't make the magic. And so your career will be short and unpleasant.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Scott. It was really a pleasure to talk to you and to get all the great advice you have. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Carolyn. It's been a pleasure to talk to you as well. I've really enjoyed it. Now, where are you going to go do this double major?
Well, I don't know yet. I have some applications due in October, so we will find out.
Okay, well, best of luck wherever that ends up being.
Next week, join us when Beatrice Bell interviews Vinita Balami, the CEO and Artistic Director of Enact Arts. Enact Arts has a vision to empower and challenge contemporary theater at the nexus of South Asian experience and global audiences. That'll be right here on the Youth Theater Podcast next Wednesday. The Youth Theater Podcast is made possible through your support, so go to anchor.fm/youththeater with an RE to become a supporter today. Remember, all the world's a stage. For Youth Theater Podcast, this is Carowyn Heaney, exiting Upstage Right.